Hello and welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia, and the topic of our conversation today is I need you to love me. One of the biggest ways we give our power away in this life is the expectation we place on others. We have learned to focus our attention on what we can get from the world outside rather than what we can give. Or if we do focus on giving, it is with the expectation of getting something in return. In our primary relationships, we often enter them or approach them with this idea that we will finally get the love we have so long wanted, needed, or desired. We may approach our romantic relationships with a need to get the love we were unable to get from our parents. Getting love becomes the focus, and we will often give love in order to get it. Our giving is not unconditional, but rather quite conditional. I will love you as long as you love me back, and if you fail to love me back the way I think you should, I will withdraw my love and my support from you. Welcome to the dysfunctional dynamic of the human race. We often come out of dysfunctional and abusive relationships with a deep hole in our soul where we had placed so much expectation to get our needs for love, attention, and affection met. Perhaps we got enough of that love and attention in the beginning of the relationship that an expectation that the well in which that love emerged would continue to supply us. When that well seemingly runs dry, we feel angry and disappointed. Granted that with toxic and dysfunctional relationships, there's often much more going on. We may be abused and mistreated, lied to, cheated on, and blamed for everything that went wrong. But what is it that causes us to take that on, to own it, to believe it? What is it that keeps us holding on, hoping we will get the love we thought we would always get from that relationship? In relationships with the narcissist, we are often so hyper-focused on that person and what we failed to get from them, like love, positive attention, accountability, loyalty, and fulfilled promises. We focus on how that person has failed us, but we forget to bring our attention back home to how we might have failed ourselves. You may have learned that the behavior of the narcissist is not your fault, and it's not. But your reaction and response to the narcissist is your responsibility. You are not responsible for that person and what he or she does or doesn't do, and you're not responsible for his or her projections and dumping of that person's emotional reality onto you, but you are responsible for yourself and how you deal with what that person does or doesn't do. Blaming that person won't bring you the healing and the peace that you so badly want and need. Getting away from blame is a challenging thing to do, especially if we feel mistreated, abused, and betrayed. We want to blame that person for hurting us so badly, for destroying our lives and making us feel so worthless. But we have to get to the deeper truth here. The deeper truth is that that person really doesn't have the power to make you feel worthless or to destroy your life. The narcissist may very well rip the fabric of your current reality to shreds and have a huge part in the crumbling of the illusion you've been living under. But that only shows you that you've been living an illusion rather than something that is real. The Course in Miracles tells us nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. Illusions will come and go. They will be built up and they will fall apart, but illusions are not based on anything real. They are illusions. Most of our love relationships are actually illusions. We develop beliefs about the relationship based on what we want or need the relationship to do for us. You might say, I finally found the love of my life. Now I can be happy. The belief that a significant relationship has the power to make us happy is just a belief. That belief is actually a lie, because it is built on the premise that something outside of yourself has the power to make you happy. Sure, you may experience moments of happiness, and for brief moments, the belief that this outside person has the power to make you happy, and this may work its way into your consciousness, but give someone else the power to make you happy, you're also giving that person the power to make you miserable. When I began to get this really important piece, I started realizing that I really don't need a man in my life. I had to really look at why I really wanted a significant other. If I'm looking to him to fulfill me, to fill an empty space inside of me, to take away my loneliness and meet my needs, I'm setting myself up for disappointment, because it is completely unrealistic that a man can come into my life and play that role for me. It may appear that he's bringing me all this good stuff in the beginning, but after the honeymoon, truth usually comes out of hiding and works its way into our conscious awareness. We begin to feel disappointed because he or she's not doing what we thought that person should do, especially if we've chosen someone who is highly dysfunctional or narcissistic. Until I can own my stuff and realize that I am truly the only one who can fulfill me, take care of my needs, confront my loneliness, fill my emptiness, and most importantly, sit through the discomfort of my own pain, I will not likely be successful in my significant relationships. Success in a significant relationship doesn't mean staying power. We can live forever in a toxic and dysfunctional relationship. It doesn't make it successful. What makes a significant relationship successful is when two people care enough about themselves and take responsibility for their own stuff so they can truly care about the other and hold the other accountable for their own stuff. We must develop honesty with ourselves and honesty with the other. Two marginally dysfunctional people can come together and truly set the foundation to grow in their relationship with each other. But two extremely dysfunctional people are not likely to find their way to healing together. They would have a better chance by coming apart and focusing on their own path to healing and wholeness. The majority of people who stay in dysfunctional relationships, especially with a narcissist or addict, avoid responsibility for their own pain and healing by focusing on the deficits of the narcissist or addict. When you believe you can heal or fix another person and your focus is trying to get your needs met from this other dysfunctional individual, you're acting in a codependent manner. Codependents give responsibility for how they feel to the other person. And so does the narcissist. So no wonder the narcissist and codependent are so attracted to each other. They both defer the responsibility for their own emotional life to the other. It can be a real awakening as a codependent person to realize that the other person really isn't the problem in your life. You are. I've had to break through this illusion myself, and I'm still breaking through. It's a process in which we need to continually remind ourselves that the other person really isn't the problem. And I'm not saying that the other person doesn't have problems, but we are responsible for our own reactions to their problems. You always have the choice to say no. I don't care what your situation is, you have a choice. And your choice is your power. Nobody can take your choice in how you respond. People may be abusive, manipulative, but you still have a choice in how you're going to respond or react to that abuse and manipulation. You are always free to leave, regardless of your circumstances. I often hear women tell me, but I have small children at home. I don't have any money. He wouldn't let me leave. He would make my life miserable. He would fight for custody of the children. If any of these circumstances are true for you and you feel disempowered by these circumstances, you're in a prison and there's only one way out, and that is to change your circumstances and find your power. Paul Farini, a mentor, tells us that if we have not taken responsibility for our own life and the creation of our own income, we're not taking care of ourselves. We're being irresponsible on some level. Okay, so we have this old dynamic where the man is the breadwinner and the woman stays at home and takes care of the children. The stay-at-home mom sometimes doesn't have her hands in the finances at all and just defers it all to the husband. And this is actually an unhealthy dynamic. Because when you don't have any financial control in your life, you've given that power to someone else. And that power can be used against you. It can be used to control and manipulate you. If you're going to be a stay-at-home mom and you both agree to this arrangement, then you need to come up with a value for your services before you make this agreement. You need to open your own bank account and make an arrangement with your significant other that a certain amount of the household income will go into your personal account, a certain amount into his personal account, and a certain amount into the joint household account to pay the mortgage, bills, and groceries. If you defer all the finances to your husband, you're giving him 100% of the financial power, which can be used against you later. It's always a good idea to build a savings account for emergencies that is in your own name. And if you are with a spouse who doesn't want you to do this, you're with a spouse who wants control over you and does not really care about what is in your best interest. When we get married, we don't want to imagine that we might be part of the 50% of marriages that end in divorce, but we need to get real. If you had cancer and the doctors told you that your chances of survival were only 50%, would you take an active or a passive role in your healing? What would you do to ensure that you were part of the 50% that survived the cancer? You would also need to consider that there is a possibility that you may not survive and use this as an opportunity to get your affairs in order. With a marriage, you also want to do whatever you can to have a successful marriage. But you also need to consider that there is a possibility your relationship will not take you into your senior years. And if this is the case, are you really going to stay at home for 18 plus years while your husband builds work, skills, and financial success, and you defer all the financial responsibility to him? You might want to consider staying at home with a financial arrangement while your kids are young or in school or before school age, and start working at some capacity when they are getting older so that you can be building skills and interacting with the outside world. I think a lot of women develop a certain safety in staying home and being stay-at-home parents, and then the outside world becomes intimidating to them. So it's important that you stay connected on some level with the outside world, with developing yourself, with developing your own talents and abilities. We can't rely on the legal system because the legal system is unreliable. We can't depend on our legal system to ensure our security. I've witnessed too many really unfair legal outcomes in divorce. Far too often I've witnessed The husband who's been working and building an empire end up hiding assets and manipulating the system to where he pays bare minimum in child support with no spousal support to a woman who's made it her career to stay at home and care for their young children. We also can't rely on the goodness of our spouse to make sure his family is adequately provided for. I've seen far too many sociopaths and narcissists who could care less about the welfare of their own children. Now, most of you, when you get married, don't realize that actually do marry a narcissist or a sociopath. Don't realize that's who you're marrying. You don't see that side of that person until later on. And so it's just a smart thing to think about, how am I going to take care of myself with the understanding that all marriages aren't going to last? And it's not about being negative, it's about being wise. We have to be smart in our arrangements and care enough about ourselves to ensure our own survival. And this is self-responsibility, rather than deferring to another to financially care for us for all eternity. If you are one of the many women who have arranged your life to where you are entirely dependent upon your husband for your financial support, start taking responsibility for making that arrangement. Realize that you agreed to it, even if that person insisted on it. You were an adult at the time and could have said, no, I'm not comfortable with that arrangement, or I will stay at home and care for the children if you will pay me a salary to do this. Once you take responsibility for your part in creating your current circumstances, you can take responsibility for creating something else. Otherwise, you're just a victim of your circumstances. I've always lived by the motto, where there is a will, there is a way. When I was 29 years old, I was pregnant, and I gave up my job and my budding young business, which was in counseling and hypnotherapy, to follow my husband to another community for a job. We were only in our new community for 2 months when my husband went on a huge cocaine binge, cleaned us out financially, and checked himself into a mental hospital where he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Meanwhile, I was left penniless in a house where the rent had not been paid that month because my husband went into our mailbox and removed the rent check I wrote along with all the bills I had paid, took that exact amount of money out of our bank account so I wouldn't notice that it was missing for a while, and he used this money to supply his binge. He stole all of my personal credit cards out of my wallet and managed to find a way to take cash advances on each one of them, maxing them out to their limits. Not only was I penniless, but I was tens of thousands of dollars in debt and had a new baby coming. Because he didn't have credit, both vehicle loans were in my name, and he took our joint Jeep and hid it at a friend's house where I couldn't find it. And I was left with this tiny little Mazda RX-7 sports car trying to get in and out of it with this growing belly. We had paid first and last month's rent on our home, and since I had no money, I had to call my landlord and give notice without any idea where I was going. On my 30th birthday, I walked into the welfare office, and I was in tears. I was a strong and proud woman and never believed my life would come to this. Only months ago, I was building a thriving counseling and hypnotherapy business and working a good job to help support the business, but had this idea in my head that I couldn't bring a child into the world alone. I was afraid. I believed I needed to follow my husband. I tried to return to the job I had, but I could only come back at a huge pay reduction. I'd already given up my counseling office and didn't have the money to rebuild my business. The people at the welfare office were very supportive, and seeing me in tears told me it is people like me that the system was created for, and they were happy to help me out. They covered my medical expenses for my pregnancy and birth, gave me food stamps and a very small amount of money. The money wasn't enough to support me, but it was a start. I had a good friend who gave me a room at her house for $200 a month, and my welfare was about $350 a month prior to my son being born. So I had $150 a month left to live on. I shared a counseling office with another healer in a holistic healing center and worked part-time under the table because I couldn't declare any income or I'd lose my benefits. And this gave me a few hundred extra a month. I also sold a travel trailer my husband and I owned outright for $1,600 and divided the money equally into envelopes to get me through the next 5 months. My brother sent me a credit card for emergencies and an extra $1,000. So it seemed like life was coming together to help me out, but I had to step out there and do what was necessary to get it through it. For years, I blamed my then ex-husband for what he did to me. I was angry at him and wanted him to pay for what he did. But he was struggling with his own guilt, shame, and bipolar disorder, continuing his path of self-destruction. I got a lot of mileage out of my victim story, and because I truly saw myself as a victim, I continued to attract relationship after relationship where I was the victim of my partner's dysfunction. As long as I saw myself as the victim, I didn't really have to take responsibility for what happened to me. It was always his fault. I had some really good stories. My first husband was bipolar, and my other relationships were with narcissistic or bipolar men. And though I began to see where my own dysfunctional upbringing set me up for attracting these types of men into my life, I still found it very difficult to shed the victim identity. If I were to shed this victim identity, I could no longer blame the neglectful or abusive men in my life for where I found myself. I had to take full responsibility. And this was a difficult thing to do, especially when it came to building trust. What helped me to take full responsibility for the circumstances I found myself in was to own the part of me that was still looking for Mr. Right in all the wrong places. I was looking for a man to restore my faith in men. I was looking for a man who I could have a healthy, functional relationship with, but I was continuing to attract unhealthy, dysfunctional relationships. I was looking for a man who could truly love me and care about me, but there was a really big problem. And that is, I had not really learned how to truly love and care about myself. I didn't feel worthy of that love. And I was attracting a mirror to how I was really feeling about myself. I was still running a program that I was unlovable and unworthy. And whenever I ended up feeling victimized by the man in my life, that part of me that felt unlovable and unworthy was activated. I believed on a deep subconscious level that men treated me badly because I was somehow bad. The men in my life failed to truly love me because deep down I was unlovable. Men easily replaced me with other women, and I interpreted the meaning to be because I really wasn't worthy. I wasn't special. I wasn't good enough. Part of my being a victim was my core belief that I just wasn't worth treating well or fighting for. I had a belief that a man would fight for me and our relationship by healing himself and stop doing all that narcissistic bipolar behavior. But because this behavior never really stopped, it was only evidence that I wasn't worth changing for. The codependent part of me either tried to get that man to change or would walk away from him and blame him for being who he was. It has been a slow road to taking full responsibility for myself, and I'm still on that road. I believe it is a lifelong journey to take those outside triggers and take full responsibility for the emotions within us that are being triggered. We're not responsible for anyone else's behavior. People will always treat us as they were treated or project onto us what they are feeling, attempting to get us to take responsibility for their feelings. We are never responsible for someone else's feelings. This does not give us permission to attack, mistreat, blame, or shame another person. The more we are accountable for our own feelings, for that which is being triggered from within us, the less we will feel the need to project onto and blame and shame another. If your significant other, for example, tells you that it's your fault that he or she did what he or she did or is feeling the way that that person feels, you have this information where you now realize the way that person feels is not my fault. It's his or her own responsibility. But you can also go within and check in with that part of yourself that wants to own that projection. That part that says, I feel like it's my fault. I feel guilty. I feel shame. I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I feel like I'm not enough. I feel like I'm not good enough for him or good enough for her. We must learn to recognize these inner voices and feelings as coming from within and take full responsibility for them. We must recognize that these feelings of inadequacy and worthlessness are likely coming from our own inner child who took responsibility for a parent, sibling, or other person's projections. Our feelings of worthlessness and inadequacy come from early childhood. We adopt programs that are circulating in our family of origin. Our parents adopt programs from their family of origin, and it gets passed down from generation to generation, so it's nobody's fault. Blaming our parents doesn't help us heal either. But it's important for us to recognize where our programs originated and where our childhood needs were not met. As adults, we can learn to meet our own childhood needs. It's never too late. The inner child is alive and well, even if it has been banished to the shadows of our awareness. Part of this thing called shadow work is to bring forth the abandoned inner child. As long as our inner child is banished to the shadows of our awareness, we will feel abandoned by those we are closest to. If I abandon my inner child, I will have the experience of being abandoned by you. If I reject my inner child, I will have the experience of being rejected by you. If I hate my inner child, I will have the experience of feeling hated by you. If I love my inner child, I get to turn things around. I'll have the experience of feeling loved by the people in my life. Or if I don't feel loved by someone in my life, I don't take it personally. If I nurture my inner child, I will be more likely of having the experience of feeling nurtured by you. And if I love my inner child and you are still being hateful or hurtful, I will protect my inner child by removing her from you. If you are uncaring towards me, I will care enough for my inner child to remove her from your careless ways. The one who is saying, I need you to love me, is your own inner child. He or she needs you to recognize that she exists, to bring her from the shadows, to bring her from that world of self-abandonment, self-loathing, and self-rejection. That child self within us needs our attention. It needs our love and care. And until you can give that love to the child within, how in the world can you expect anyone else to give it to you? How can you expect you would ever really let it in? How we feel about our own inner child has a lot to do with what we attract into our lives. If I ignore the feelings of my own innocence, I will attract someone into my life who ignores my feelings. This is the piece most of us are missing. We're missing the boat and angry at the boat for sailing off without us. We must learn to love our inner child, our innocent self. And from that self-love, the love within us begins to grow and expand. Just like a big bright light expanding from our heart center. You may have developed a belief that love heals all wounds. And so if you love someone enough, he or she will be healed. Well, this is only really true for self-love. Love does heal all wounds, but that is a love that emerges from our own heart. The love we would offer another to heal his or her wounds is conditional love, not unconditional love. So we're basically saying, I'm going to offer you this conditional love out of a semi-closed heart or a completely closed heart, hoping that you will love me back enough for me to feel safe opening my heart. And it doesn't work like this. We're offering conditional love with expectations. And we're angry when our expectations are not met. Instead, we must learn to offer unconditional love to the inner child and allow it to fill us up, expanding our own heart to a place where our cup is overflowing. And it's from that overflowing cup that we have enough love to offer others. And this love must be truly unconditional. We're not giving this love in order to get. We are giving this love because it is freely flowing from the well of our heart, and we have a desire to share from our overflow. When we say to ourselves, that person doesn't deserve my love, we're telling ourselves a lie that will stifle our own ability to feel that universal love. Every child of the universe deserves love. A belief that some of us are deserving of love and others are not comes back as a belief that we ourselves are somehow undeserving of love. If every child of the universe was able to open their heart and receive the love flowing in from the universe, there would be no cruelty, no war, no hatred, and no narcissism. We need to learn to see the innocence of all, but not feel we need to be the savior, rescuer, or caretaker to all. One important piece of information to integrate is that we cannot open another's heart to love. The key is within each one of us, so we can't open it. We can't take our own key to our own heart and open somebody else with it. It doesn't fit. Each person is responsible as an adult to open their own heart and to deal with whatever blocks are within them that is keeping their heart closed. And some people are afraid to open their heart and never will. True love comes from within us, not outside of us. So we can't expect by sharing our love with another that it will open that person's heart. It is our job to open our own heart to love and share it freely without a concern as to how others are receiving it. That is none of our business. We also learn to love and care about ourselves enough not to put ourselves in harm's way. You must be willing to communicate your reality of how that person's actions or behavior is affecting you. And if he or she cannot or will not hear you, then it is necessary to remove yourself from the bad behavior of another person. You might say, when you talk to me like that, it doesn't feel good to me. I'm going to take a break. And when you are willing to talk to me respectfully, I'm willing to listen to what you have to say. If that person doesn't understand the concept of talking to you respectfully or tells you that you don't deserve to be treated respectfully, you can't argue with that person. It's not your role to defend yourself to that person or convince that person that you're worthy or valuable. It's your role to remove yourself from situations where another person is unable to be respectful to you or unwilling to be. Because this is self-respect. A lot of my clients will say to me, I tried to tell him that I don't like it when he talks to me like that, but he just yells at me more and blames me for everything. Well, what you need to understand is that it is not self-loving to stand there and allow someone to yell at you and blame you. It's also not loving to yell at or blame another person. When yelling and blaming are going on, the person doing the yelling and blaming is disconnected from himself, from spirit, and from the other person, and is not in a place to resolve anything. It's best to either take space or give that person space, but absolutely under no conditions be a punching bag, an emotional dumping ground, or a scapegoat for another person. A good book for learning healthy communication skills is a book called Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life by Marshall Rosenberg. If you are unsure If you've tried everything in your relationship to resolve the issues you're struggling with, practice nonviolent communication with that person. And if that person still cannot hear you or respond to you in a respectful manner, then there is nothing further that you can do to resolve your relationship issues. You will know that you've already done everything that you can, and a lot of people just need to know that. Your ability to break through to another is not near as important as your ability to break through to yourself and your own inner child. This always needs to be the priority area of focus for you. When you can truly love and nurture the child within, your feelings of deserving love change to match the love you're giving to yourself. Your self-worth and good feelings about yourself increase. Self-love becomes a practice, more important than any other practice you can develop. When you truly learn to love you, you will realize you don't need anyone else to love you. You're filled with all the love you need from the inside out, and you will have no shortage of love in your life because your cup is overflowing. We are magnetized to those with overflowing cups because people with overflowing cups radiate love. It pours from them. It's a bright light around them. It's contagious. These people are so busy giving of their overflowing cups that they're not concerned with getting because there's no lack. This is true love. This is unconditional love. And I'm not talking about being an island. I'm not talking about living without other people in your life. You know, we need people in our lives. It doesn't have to be a significant other. But the more you love yourself, the more you will automatically draw more and more loving people into your lives. And that's what you have to realize, is that there will be no lack. If your cup is empty, go within and stay there until you can begin to cultivate that love from inside. Open your heart from the inside with the key that has always been there. Remember always, it is the voice of innocence, that child within your own heart, that is saying, I need you to love me. Love is an inside job. Give it to yourself. Be an example of love, and you will never find yourself seeking love in all the wrong places again. Blessings on your journey, and you can learn more about my work or sign up for counseling services at narcissismfree.com or pathbacktoself.com. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.